Well, welcome, everybody. This is the third podcast that we're doing. And like General Motors EV sales, we keep doubling readership. So I think we're up to six or seven now. And that's very, very impressive. And if you're listening while mowing your lawn, it's not the season to be mowing your lawn. I don't know what the hell you're doing. Praise to be listening to us. But without further ado, I have my great colleague here, Mr. Grabinski, followed by Todd Sohn, who is the ETF guru in the entire business. So there are a couple of things going on with the markets today that people might want to discuss broadly. Let's first and foremost talk about interest rates, particularly the 10-year note. Todd, what's going on there in your view?
I think you have a test, technically at least, of 475. And I think Jason Ryan had once said 450 was the red line. Maybe that goalpost is getting moved to 475. The curious part is this is happening while you're multiple cuts into a cycle right now. And I wonder if that leads to any sort of agita for our equity market going forward.
Well, I think December was a month of agita for the equity
market. Yeah, further agita.
And this January looks like it's more. Could we just talk about the historical December versus January? December is far less important. Santa Claus rally is far less important than what happens January.
Yeah, there's three traditional January barometers, right? The Santa Claus rally lasts 5 days of the year, and the first two of the new year. Not great. There's the first 5 days of the year, and then there's the January barometer. So goes January, so goes the rest of the year. I think the full January measurement is the most important of those three, because you get off on a bad foot. You're already behind in the game the rest of the year.
So I have my own theory about rates, which is it's being driven by supply, both domestic and global. The Chinese are borrowing. Europeans, Donald Trump, after correctly pointing out they were underspending on defense GDP at 2%, said it should go to 5 if they agreed to go to 3. That has to be borrowed to do it. The Germans are talking about breaking some of their debt limits. But Ryan, you've studied not rates, but earnings. What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, earnings, you know, for the most part, are expected to be pretty strong this year. We're looking at earnings growth of about 13-14%, where the consensus stands right now. More importantly, we're coming up on the fourth quarter reporting season. Now, there's some talk of earnings for the fourth quarter were pulled forward into the third quarter. But even so, when you look at the growth rates, it's still expected to be about 9.5%. I would just come back to interest rates for a second. You know, we got the ISM services print today. The prices paid component was actually pretty hot, which I think is what's driving the sell-off in bonds today. Personally, if you look at the ISM services price paid component versus CPI, it has tended to lead increases in inflation. So I think that's kind of spooking the markets.
What was that number? I didn't see it.
It was 64 and change was on the price paid. It was up about 6 points from where it was last.
Is there a reason why that was the case? Is for lawyers raising their fees? Do they capture tolls in New York City? Is that the reason why prices are up?
Those are certainly going
Garden
up
State
well.
Parkway?
Yeah.
That is now going to go up. Those of us who live south 60th Street.
Oh, congestion pricing?
Yourself.
Well, let me share with you something about congestion pricing. It makes a lot of sense. They're trying to force people into, when I say it makes a lot of sense, I understand they're trying to penalize people riding their own cars. However, they're trying to force people into a transportation system that is decrepit, whether we're talking about New Jersey Transit, which is now indexed to inflation. So they just got a big increase, thinking they had another big increase. Service is decrepit. And the New York City subway system, which has become a wild west, although we're told that that's only in the newspapers. It's really all in your mind. It's not your wallet, but we'll discuss that another time. So we have rates and earnings. Earnings look good. Are earnings particularly STEMI again just in tech? Is that where all the money is being made?
Yeah, tech is certainly expected to be contribute pretty significantly. When you look at for fourth quarter revenues, growth on the for tech is supposed to be around 11%. That's by far the strongest sector. The overall index is expected to grow closer to 4%, which has actually been coming down. So, you know, this brings you to this debate of, are we moving forward? Are we seeing a slower growth, or are we going to reaccelerate? If rates are kind of the arbiter for the economy, it's hard to see a reacceleration. I think about housing as one area where we could see a reacceleration of growth. And, you know, if you look at the 30-year fixed rate mortgage from the time the Fed started its rate cutting cycle back in September to the most recent end of last week, you're looking at an increase of 80 basis points. So affordability continues to be a big issue for a reacceleration in housing. And you think about all the industries that are tied to housing, it doesn't appear that that's going to be where the reacceleration is going to happen. One of the other things I noticed today that actually occurred was the market has been removing cuts for 2025 overall. You know, I guess a couple, I'd say, 6 to 8 weeks ago, we were looking at 4 cuts for this year. Just a week and a half ago, we were looking at 2 cuts. Today, it's actually back down to about 1.5 cuts. So it removed another cut today, which I think is what you're seeing and why you're seeing some of the sell-off in risk assets overall. Obviously, you know, we can debate if risk assets are cheap or expensive here. Obviously the value multiples are about as high as they've ever been. You really have to go back to the tech bubble to see valuations at the levels that they are. Some of the investors that I talk to suggest that you can justify the multiples because the top of the market, they print so much money, they generate so much free cash flow that the multiples are justified, and continuing to see growth rates that are well above other industries or other places around the world. So the capital continues to flow here. But, whether or not that remains true going forward is yet to be seen. It's hard to kind of put a dent in that story. But something will come along to derail it.
Can I ask, Todd, I thought you said this morning that there were 10 stocks that were 40% of the S&P. Did you say that or did I dream that?
No, I said that. It's a nightmare almost in a sense.
Tell me how that manifests itself.
They're just under 40%. By the end of the week, they could be 40%. That's the highest in the 45 years of data that I have. It's highest since the Nifty 50, I think. Oof. And it's Apple and Nvidia, which are 7%. Microsoft is 6.5%. And then you have names like Amazon, Alphabet, Meta, Tesla to an extent, which are all going from 2.5% to 4%, if not more. I think it's interesting that there's 12 stocks that have a greater than 1% weight in the S&P 500 for about 43% weight. In the tech bubble, it took 25 stocks to reach that level. There are 25 stocks over 1% weight. So this concentration keeps creeping higher, which has been great for passive investors. But at some point, how much is too much?
So we have a lot of concentration in the market, but can we talk a little bit about sentiment too? We talked about that in the last podcast in December. It's about right because you got a little bit of air coming out of the markets. Sentiment by some measures is at decade highs. Is that right? In the dollar?
Well, sentiment on the dollar using the survey service that we get is the highest bit in the last 10 years and really over the last 40 years too. So people are really bullish U.S. dollars, right? Whether that's because the price action went up, or because the new administration, who knows? But usually when you get that aggressive, it's more than likely closer to the end of the run than the beginning.
Well, that's on the dollar, but on the equity market as well, we're looking. I think I saw a Bank of America survey a week or so ago that talked about mutual fund managers' percentage of cash was the lowest that they've done on record. Individual investors were the highest they've been in decades.
Got to get bullish. The big names.
Well, they got to buy the index, and of course, the index is actively managed too. What would you recommend to an active manager? Like, look, okay, how do you keep your customers? How do you keep people happy as the index continues to be most active managers in the business? What advice would you offer, Ryan?
That's a good question there, Mr. Allwell. I would say I think the biggest biggest thing that investors. At least I'd say from the conversations that I have that they're always most concerned about is preservation of capital. And if you get a large drawdown year, so, when you think about the percentage of active managers that outperform over the last 15 years, and that's really the post QE, the years where they perform best are actually when you get these large drawdowns in equity markets. So 2022 comes to mind. And that's the benefit of having an active manager is that they're not holding the top 10 stocks at the weights that they are in the index. And if you're naturally limited to constrained to holding them at the percentage that they're in the index, you're naturally going to outperform if those stocks underperform. 2022 is a perfect example because the Magnificent Seven had a significant drawdown. They had weak earnings landscape for them. Ultimately led to a sell-off in the broader equity market. But a lot of active managers actually did well because they didn't own NVIDIA at 7%, Apple at 7%. It gives you a good opportunity to actually put fresh capital to work. Now, you know, that's always easier said than done because not everyone has fresh capital on the sidelines. As you mentioned, managers are holding the least amount of cash that they've had in some time. So, you know, it works better in theory than it does in practice. But, you know, I think that's the biggest advantage that active managers have. In any given year, there's a percentage of stocks within the S&P 500 that are outperforming. That's greater than the top of the market. You just, you know, you kind of have to focus on those companies and keep an eye on what industries those companies
are. That's your performance. I'd be broader than that. I'd say also, look, you want to do well, you want to earn your customers money as a fiduciary, but you also want to, you can offer more services for them. You can offer estate planning services, trust services. You want to be on the phone when the market is down and be on the phone when the market's up. That relationship is going to sustain assets under management because ETFs, as Todd Will knows, is on its historic run here a little bit. Can we talk also about the man of the hour who is now tweeting or Xing to the Germans or the British or to Americans about Doge and what his plans for the global planet is? The richest man in the world, I'm talking about Elon Musk. Well, the stock is up 70% since the election. Yeah. I noticed that people like Edward Luce in the Financial Times now trying to tie, and this might be a strategy, to tie Musk into Trump to call him a co-president, which at some point will produce a reaction, I think they think, by Trump, as they did with, you know, other people, Steve Bannon in the past, where Steve Bannon was considered the architect of his success, and he was soon cashiered after that. But I'm wondering if Elon is flying too close to the sun and that the wax in his wings are going to melt and that the enterprise value that he has regarding Tesla and some of these other enterprises are going to fall. For example, FT has a story today about Maloney and Starlink, that they don't want to do it because Maloney evidently tried to strike a deal with him for Starlink in Italy, and it's a political uproar about her relationship with Elon.
I don't know what the end result of that is, though, because, you know, he's not just going to disappear.
I mean, he has his objectives. The way I see it is, right, the EV credit is likely to go away under a Trump administration. And so, you know, you automatically think, okay, that's a negative for Tesla. But, he always has a bigger plan, right? So think about autonomous driving. The Trump administration is into autonomous driving. I know, you're rolling your eyes here. You don't think it's going to happen, but...
No, I think it will happen. It's just not going to happen yet. He's been talking about that for years. And it's like self-cooling cans of beer. I mean, people talk about it all the time. It just never happens. And the regulatory environment is still fairly heavy. I've seen the Waymo cars when I'm out in California.
Yeah, of course.
Some of them have drivers in them, or they have co-pilots in them. I point out that the Airbus and the Boeing can take off and land without a pilot, but everybody is feeling pretty comfortable like it in the plane. I always glance over to see whether or not the pilot has any gray hairs. That reassures me a little bit. If they had, you know, the youthful hair of Todd Soto, I'd probably get a little bit more worried. But that experience should pay off at some point, right? And that experience right now is, we just don't know.
Yeah, but we
do know, based on that experience, that we have technology in different areas where we can go driverless or pilotless.
Yeah.
And we're not doing it.
Sure.
People are fearful to do it.
Yeah. But that's just one angle that he has, right? So he's, you know, the CEO Twitter, right? Like Twitter is, I'd say Twitter is booming now relative to what it was before.
Yeah. Well, with all the people bending the knee for one Donald J. Trump, that should mean that advertising revenues come back to X.
Right. But what's interesting, what I think is actually interesting is what other companies are now doing, because they're seeing what the benefits of Elon Musk being close to the next administration is at. Look at what Meta did. They just you know, put Dana White on their board.
Well, also one of the things that you've heard the spin that in Japan, Honda and Nissan are coming together because of electric car technology. I think that's just a pile of bunk. I think that will be the worst merger since Chrysler and Mercedes back in 1998 or 1999 when that occurred. Honda makes a great product. Nissan makes a fine product. Honda gains nothing by merging with them. Management is going to be distracted. Customers are not going to pick up anything. It's just going to be...
Well, they have to compete with the auto company in the region that chose the right path, and that's hybrids with Toyota.
Well, right, but again, going back to my trip to China, it's interesting, the green press is now including hybrids and plug-in hybrids and EVs is all part of their sales data, right? They're like, well, all right, EV sales are slowing, but we have hybrids, but we have plug-in hybrids. All the large electric vehicles in China are hybrids. Makes a lot of sense. But I'll tell you something about price. I saw vehicles that in China were pretty expensive. I thought $70,000. Toyota is coming out via Lexus with a new 470, big SUV. It's a luxury SUV, fancy grill. It's been around for a long time. High residual. It's frequently stolen. Very reliable vehicle. The new one, the 700H, they call it. The sticker that I saw after a test drive that someone posted was $174,000.
Yeah, it's
these prices are insane.
That might speak to some of the inflation coming back. You know, it's
out of my range.
These prices,
I just don't see these prices. I think the prices are crazy. I mean, literally, it was in Los Angeles in September, and there's a billboard out there and someplace off Hollywood Boulevard, and it says, the rent is too damn high.
Yeah,
some of these prices are still high. And now we're running into, talk about inflation coming back. Eggs are disappearing off of the shelves again. Egg prices are going up. Soybean prices are going up. You talked about the service sector. We have among the reasons why your boyfriend Justin Trudeau was deposed was because of housing prices, because he had too many immigrants in. So what people thought was a positive turned out to be a big negative. That's not just true in Canada.
That's
true in Ireland. It's true in Germany. It's true in France. And it has to be true in the United States. If we have 10 or 15 million more people looking to live someplace, put up our pressure on rent somehow.
I think it was in November. I was with some real estate investors and we were talking about inflation. And I'd say this is actually one of the topics that came up because I was talking about how there's a chance that inflation reaccelerates here, largely due to the shortage of housing. And one of the things that they brought up to me was, well, if we have this, if we deport immigrants, it actually may lead to additional vacant housing for individuals here to actually live in. It may actually provide some relief in certain cities. Obviously, it's not going to be broad-based, you know, across the whole country, but in certain areas, it may provide some relief. I'm not sure I'm totally on board with that idea, but it's certainly, I'd be open to it.
You'd be open to what?
To the theory that providing some additional housing in some of these cities through deportation would actually provide some relief to the housing expenses in certain cities.
Well, I agree it's a food chain, but we're not talking about your fancy bourbon Fairfield can't ever talk about maybe Bridgeport.
Yes, of course.
Where the small nuclear power plants by Bill Gates, they'll probably have 16 of them there to power the lights in Greenwich. Is there anything else that you think is worthy of discussion here that you thought was interesting? Make people some money? Is Boeing bottoming?
Can make the case, but I think there's opportunity costs.
Suppose like
that there. Possible.
Assuming with energy, energy bottoming, maybe. I mean,
there was this the recent plane crash, right? It was a falling plane and stocked. So.
Yeah, but it's
I know they just can't get out of their own plane.
But yeah, well, the interesting thing about that, Ryan, at least I noticed in the paper, is they didn't say a Korean airline crashed. They said a Boeing crashed, right? Well, Boeing dominates the business.
Yeah, see the
Liner Air. Right. 3 out of 4 times it's going to be a Boeing plane, but maybe there's some value there. I don't know.
The airlines have been doing quite well.
They have a broader airline space.
Let's also, before we go and we'll get out of here, I saw that the Biden administration, one of the rules that they're throwing out there before they leave is on home hot water heaters. You chuckle about that, but in Germany, it became a big issue that people had to move from A to B. The new one, the replacement one that they want to put in place, it's 80% more expensive than the existing technology. You save like $12 a year. It makes no economic sense to spend 80% more to save $12 a year, but that's where they're going. We had a blackout in Puerto Rico recently. And the governor, who is center right in Puerto Rico, said that they will be spending fewer dollars on alternate energy, wind and solar, and more on sustaining the grid. And that is so important. I just don't understand why people don't spend more money on the grid.
Incidentally, President-elect Trump, he came out today and said that there will be no more wind farms built during his next administration. So I think that speaks to the direction that the energy power generation is moving in towards fossil fuels, at least in the near term. At the end of the day, we're going to be relying on natural gas. We're going to be relying on oil.
Can I ask one just observation about the Trump administration right now? Is he, by threatening Canada as the 51st state, threatening to take over
Greenland,
reinvading Panama Canal? Is this, as Peter Thiel just said, Trump speaking, where his supporters take him figuratively, and the New York Times editorial board takes it literally that they expect that the Marines are going to be landing at Greenland any moment? Is he diminishing his power to get things done? Because they have a lot they want to get done. We all want them to be successful. We want the country to be successful. Is he blowing himself up here? Or is he going to blow?
I don't think so.
Gone for gold.
I think at the end of the day, right, the number one priority is going to have to come back to taxes, right? He can talk about all this other stuff, but it all comes back to that. He has to get the taxes extended in the first, call it, half of the first year of his presidency, because the races, or the house is so close. It's so tight that, you can't afford to lose a couple seats. You lose a couple seats, all of a sudden you're not getting a tax bill through.
Right. It's 2 years. It's a short window that does. But a lot of these tariffs, as you know, are basically, maybe, I shouldn't say basically, because I think they're negotiating tactics,
definitely
against the Canadians and the Mexicans. But the Chinese, not so much. He means it on China. I listened to a podcast on the New York Times with Anthony Blinken this past week, and he disagreed on tariffs on just about everything, but he agreed with the tariffs on China. Yep. China hasn't played nice in the sandbox for a long period of time, but the West made a bad bet with China. They bet that as China got more prosperous, they'd get more democratic, and they got more autocratic. They've got more. There's a purge going on right now in the military. It might be because of corruption reasons. There's corruption there too, but it might be to eliminate perceived enemies of the state too. Could I just end that on China? We had banged the table on China as a short-term trade, and not Utah, not throwing any punches there. But is that over now? I mean, the market there is rolling over.
I think it's hard to get. You're down 20% on some of those ETFs and indices. It's hard to stop.
So you think it's over?
I wouldn't be shocked if you had another run higher again, but it's just more the same.
Can I ask one question before we go? One of the topics of conversation for a long time was Ryan's former girlfriend from Fairfield County.
What's her name down in Florida now?
Kathy Wood. How is she doing?
Well, the performance has been strong.
But
across their, what I would call their satellite funds, not the flagship, but money isn't returning.
She had a big ETF launch too, didn't she?
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin ETF.
Bitcoin specific one, but they have funds that are focused on space exploration and have done very well. But the investors are not returning in the droves that they did 4 or 5 years ago, just yet, for whatever reason. ETS Dean.
Anything else?
I'm fresh out.
Well, once again, Joe Rogan can sleep soundly tonight.